Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm Ben Hunter. I'm here with Sarah McDewling.
Hello.
And we are thrilled to be sitting across from Mark Brandy, who on the back of the award-winning Wimmera has just delivered The Rip. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks, Sarah. It's wonderful to be here. My first ever visit to Booktopia, and it's exceeded my expectations.
Okay. Oh.
So flattering.
Mark, your success has just come on us like a wave. You've hit us completely unawares. Take us back to before Wimmera hit the fan, if you will. You won an award before you were even published. Is that right?
Yeah, that was the... That was a strange one. That was the dagger.
Just a casual dagger.
Yeah, the British Crime Writers Association dagger. That was a nice way to start.
It's a good resume, Mark. Like, I'm telling you.
You think I should have stopped right there? I could have retired at that point. That was a pretty nice moment. Actually, can I tell a little story?
Please.
Because
take us there.
I remember when I was long listed for that actually before, I'll go further back than that, I was considering entering the prize, which this was before Wimmera was published, of course, and I had a reminder in my calendar that the deadline was coming up to enter, and then the deadline arrived, and I was sitting there thinking, oh, will I enter this? It's a crime writing award. I don't even know if my book is crime. I don't know if Wimmera is a crime novel.
This is the whole conversation we're going to have.
And then about like 10 minutes to midnight, basically, I thought, oh, bugger it, I'll send in the entry, what I've got to lose kind of thing. And I promptly forgot about it. And then a few months later, I got the message that I'd been longlisted. I was like one of 12 who'd made the long list. And I thought it was amazing. I told my agent, she was very excited. And I probably didn't know at that point. I mean, I knew the daggers were a big deal, but I didn't appreciate how much of a big deal that they were.
Mm.
And then, I kind of thought that was as far as it would go, being longlisted. It's a global competition. But then a couple of months after that, I made a short list of about six. And I was the only Australian on the shortlist. Everyone else was from the UK. I think there was one American on there. And I kind of thought at that point that I was just the token Australian inclusion. I just had this feeling that it was that they were trying to appear international. Like, you talk down your chances so much. I just thought, there's no way this is going to happen. And the someone from the organising committee contacted me and said, oh, we have this big gala dinner in London where we announce all the daggers and all the luminaries of publishing are there and great writers as well. We would really love it if you came along. And I kind of thought, wow, that sounds great, but it's a long trip. I thought it's pretty expensive to go to London. And if I don't win, it's going to be a long trip back, you know, drinking those little bottles of wine on the plane. I thought, there's no way I'm going to win. And so I ended up, I actually... found out the result in my lounge room one morning. I remember it clearly. I was eating porridge. I had my dog next to me and I was scrolling through Twitter absentmindedly as writers tend to do. And I saw there was like an announcement that the debut dagger had just been announced in London, and there was a link to an image. And sure enough, it was gala dinner as they described. And people were dressed up on the stage and they had this huge screen there with a picture of my face up there. so that's how I like found out that I'd won. In some ways I regret, of course, not going, because it would have been incredible, but that was probably it was a huge moment for me in hindsight, a huge moment for Wimmera, because it got a lot of attention for the manuscript at that point.
Understandable.
Well, I mean, we all loved Wimmera, and I think, you know, when a book is so successful like that, how did you feel going into writing The Rip? Like, was there a lot of pressure? Was it, you know, to meet the expectations, or was that not an issue at all?
Oh, I suppose for me, writing is really a place of calm and of refuge, and to disappear in that world, even a dark world, is a wonderful thing to be able to do. And so when Wimmera was out and I started working on the rip, it was kind of like it kept me, I think, grounded when I was writing, when I was working on that. And I wasn't sure where the book was going to go, where the story was going to go. I began with that voice, the voice of the central character, and the first chapter, as it appears now, with her waking up in the park, is exactly as the first day I started writing her voice, and that's how I started. And I wasn't sure where it was going to lead. I didn't know who the other characters were, so I didn't feel, I suppose, a great deal of pressure so much. I think probably the pressure I feel as a writer, I largely put on myself in terms of the you have a kind of an ideal, or you come to a point where you have an idea of what you want a story to do and what it is that you want to say and how you want it to work. And that's really the greatest pressure is trying to realise that vision once you have it. And that takes a while for me. That takes quite a bit of writing before I realise what it is that I'm trying to say.
Mm. You, touched before on the fact that you weren't sure if your book was even a crime novel. I think that's an interesting thing to talk about, right? Because...
Yeah, particularly in light of, we've just been looking at all these... blurbs and accolades that are coming from both sort of spheres of literary fiction and crime writing. So it's like you've been embraced by both worlds, if they even are separate worlds.
I mean, I think they are viewed as separate worlds, but I think that they don't have to
be. Maybe that's an artificial creation.
You know, and it's books like these ones that kind of crosses those boundaries. Because, I mean... I don't know. I mean, we could talk forever about genre versus literature. And it's a really, it's an interesting conversation, but you always sort of come back down to...
Did you feel an editorial push in one direction or another to sort of firm you into one, mode?
No.
Or even in the way of, the way of you present yourself and market yourself?
Yeah. I didn't, really. And I thought... I didn't feel a need to write a crime novel exactly, and I don't think, again, I don't think the Rip necessarily is. I think it can be viewed from the vantage point of literary fiction or as crime fiction. I tend to characterise it as a kind of a story about crime or about a crime. It has crime in it, much like Wimmera, but there are certain conventions, perhaps, of the crime genre that aren't necessarily there. But that said, one of the great things about traversing both worlds is that you get to reach different readers and that you otherwise may not. And so I've had straight crime readers, for lack of a better description, who've read Wimmera and got in touch with me and loved it. Conversely, those who have normally been readers of literary fiction and who wouldn't pick up a crime fiction novel. So it's kind of nice to be in the middle of that. I suppose I didn't feel pressure. I write to where my interests are, and crime, it seems, just happens to be one of those interests. And it's not as though I sit down and go, okay, I'm going to write a story about a crime and a crime's going to happen in this. That just happens fairly organically. I had no idea the plot beforehand. I don't want to sound kind of too esoteric about it all, but once the central character, once her voice became real to me and true and I'm kind of inside of her world, it's really I know, like, there's a quote, like, from William Faulkner where he, you know, talks about the writing process of that once you've got the character, you just need to follow them around and write down what they're doing. And in a sense, I think that there's an element of truth to that. It's oversimplifying it. But once that character or characters are real to you, the process for me really comes to life at that point.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, reading the takes the reader on this incredible little journey in only a handful of pages, and it does strike you with an incredibly strong voice, a real sense of rhythm. You know, your the way you use kind of paragraphing and grammar is very centered on the lines of internal thought dialogues. And so you're stepping through this narrative with this girl who's, you have this horrible sense of doom with her circumstance, but you really are just taken along for the ride. And it's fascinating to hear you say that it felt the same way kind of writing it.
The sense of doom is like when you... classifying this book, whether you fall down on that it's a literary novel or that it's a crime novel, one thing that I think defines it so much is that this sense of this terrible thing that has happened, that's hanging over them. I feel like I don't want to name her, like, even though you do, she has a name, I feel like it's a great moment in the book when you know it. So your unnamed narrator is lovable, like, but the readers know more than her throughout most of the book in terms of what's going on around her a little bit.
Mm.
We before the podcast, I joked that this was just going to be 20 minutes of me talking about how much I love the book and no one would get a word in edgewise, and I feel like I'm hovering around the danger of doing that right now. So I'll pass it back to you, Mark, and just say we normally do begin this by asking the author to talk a little bit about the book. Mm. So for people listening, what would just explain a little bit about The Rip for them?
Yeah, sure. Well, it really starts with that character, unnamed, a woman sleeping rough on the streets of Melbourne with her best friend Anton and her dog Sunny, and they're both battling addiction and really trying to just make ends meet, really, from one day to the next. Not terribly unhappy people, and I would say striving for something better as well. But they then come into contact with a guy named Steve, who is appears to be one of Anton's old friends, and Steve offers them a place to stay in his flat. Seems like a pretty good deal at the time, and for the first few weeks that they're there, things are going quite well. But increasingly, Steve becomes more unpredictable, more intense, and there's this strange smell as well in the flat that both she and Anton start to notice. And really, before they know it, they're caught up in something unspeakable and something which will threaten their lives. So I suppose I see it. There's darkness there, there's grittiness and crime, certainly. But it's also, I think, a story of hope too.
Mm.
I didn't write it with a message. I'm not one of those authors who sort of is, it's not a sermon in any way, but I think what I feel is important in the story, or part of what I feel is important, is the power of kind of small kindnesses in life, and then those things which we can sometimes underestimate in our dealings with people, and it could be dealings with people around us or people on the street or anywhere. We might look at them and think they're insignificant, but to a person on the receiving end, they're not insignificant, and they can actually add up to something life-changing sometimes. So that's I suppose, for me, the story in a nutshell.
Yeah, that comes through so well. And also that I wanted to ask you how much you deal with or know about homeless people, because it rings so true for me. But I guess the thing that I'm going to struggle to put this into words, but when it's a story about people who, are struggling with addiction or homelessness and things are grim, I guess the danger is that it would just be you'd really wallow in the storytelling surrounding that, how hard it is and the indignities of it. And that isn't really the case here in the RIP. It's kind of like you have to reset all your prior, no, I'm not going to get this.
Preconception.
Yeah, you do. And it seems such a simple thing to say that, obviously these all people are the same. But I guess in this book, these people, they're just living in a different world that's right alongside our own, with all the same, they've got the same integrity, the same, goals and everything. I'm struggling to put into words, but I guess you just, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that I know what it is.
I'm struggling. You know what you're saying?
So perhaps it's not a novel that's trying to elicit pity or
not at all. That's it.
Or judgment.
Yeah,
it's trying to. Yeah, I like the way that you phrase that. It's an idea of hope. Because that really does pull you through. You really fall in love with this narrator character as you sort of step through her. Surviving day to day on the street, which is a completely alien way of life, isn't it?
It feels so different. It's and your writing is beautiful, and so the aura of the way that it's written is lovely and dreamy and gorgeous, but the subject matter isn't. Yeah. So you've got that sort of real distance between the kind of vibe of the writing and the story.
And what's happening?
How did you lay it out? How did you how did you sit down and work on it? Because it's gushing, but it does feel dreamy, as Sarah says. It's like you're stepping through a thoughtscape. Almost.
It could almost be a fantasy world, but it's very much not.
Well, it does make reference, of course, to Pan's Labyrinth. But to go back to that earlier point, just really around homelessness and some of the realities of that, I suppose I've lived all my adult life I grew up in the country, but I lived all my adult life in inner Melbourne. And it's really in the last, I suppose, few years, probably from about 2015. I mean, there's always homelessness around. There's always addiction and heroin on the streets as well, to varying degrees. It was really in the last few years, though, probably 2016 onwards, that it became more visible on the streets. And I suppose it's something that I've always been aware of, and I was working in the Justice Department for a few years, and right around the corner was the Salvation Army Outreach Centre, and it always struck me how, people like us who were swanning around in suits and thinking we're changing the world and working on policy, government policy and those sorts of things, were so divorced from the realities of life in some ways, because these people were actually the real world right out there that many of us turned a blind eye to. And I think that increasingly, I never thought I'd write a book about that subject matter, but it was a natural area of interest for me and curiosity too. And I suppose the community reaction to it as well. In Melbourne, when homelessness became particularly visible in the CBD, a lot of traders wanted it forced out. They didn't want it. It's an eyesore, and I'm sure there's been similar issues in Sydney as well. And it's interesting how the community respond, because you have a section of the community who, are quite sympathetic to people's plight and see it as a social issue. You have others who turn a blind eye and they just want the problem to go away. And some who kind of blame the people involved and think, you know, we're a wealthy country. How come you're in this situation? And so I suppose in writing, the central character and the characters in the Rip, it was very important to me that she had agency and that she was strong and that she does not see herself as a victim at all. And she is, you know, trying to live her life, trying to improve her life. And as you said, Sarah, like the how, you know, the difference between people is not that great. And, yeah, you know, her lived experience and my lived experience is really only different because of the circumstances that I was born into, essentially. And, you know, we still all feel, we still feel love, we still get hungry, we still do all those things. It's with a different frame of reference, definitely, but we still have dreams and hopes and fears as well. And I just think that there's sometimes, and again, I know it's not like I'm giving a sermon, but I think there's a tendency to make have a sense of the other sometimes with people who are in different circumstances. Mm. And that's not what I necessarily feel when I come into contact with people who are from a different walk of life. I try to look for commonality, I suppose, more than differences, and that's what I try to explore in my writing. But in terms of the process of writing it and how, because it does have that kind of dreamlike quality in her thoughts a lot.
And it's a completely different way of living because, you know, this character, she doesn't have a phone. She doesn't have, beyond, you know, getting money together to, you know, score and get a place to stay for the night, there's no program. There's no friends or family to go and visit. There's no workplace.
Sunny's the priority.
Yeah, there's the dog.
Yeah.
And so there's this huge sense of time, you know, just a whole day just feels huge. Tell us about that. Like,
I think that's sort of like I kind of like I in writing the story, I sort of fell in love with her a little bit, and I fell in love with you know, even though her world is filled with yeah, there's some darkness there and some challenges. I kind of fell in love with her world as well, because it's just the hope that she brings to it in almost every experience that she has is I found like a little bit. I mean, it's hard because I increasingly was mindful in writing it that things, you know, bad stuff's going to happen here. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be, you know, we're not talking the feel-good hit of the summer. This is going to be, like, some bad stuff's going to happen. I had that sense as well. But, like, I really, in some ways, there's maybe even some parallels with Wimmera there, with Fab and Ben, and that sense of the, you know, days being endless summer, and things are, when things are going well, and I think when things are kind of happier for the main character, she does have that feeling, and time does become a little bit elastic in the story because you don't have those points of reference that need to be at the workplace at 9 o'clock necessarily. But then I think when they move into the flat, that is flipped on its head and becomes like a claustrophobic environment. You still have that sense of, I suppose, time, not being as we would live it. Time is different. But I liked that quality. I liked that part
There's a real world. Sense of reading it that you're playing in that space. You're really enjoying it.
Yeah, well, yeah.
It's sort of just hypnotic. And there's and it's kind of... And I love that you've essentially answered a question I didn't even have the words to sort of ask. Like, the reason I think there's no structure to her life. Like, she's got goals that she needs to meet. But while the book could have been all about the things that her and Anton don't have, it isn't. It's about the things that they have and the things that they want, maybe. But it's not, you know, yeah, there's no element of ceremony. It's like a snapshot of a life, and it's quite a life full of little unexpected joys and little beauties, but also with this menacing, like, danger hanging over it. And you do fall in love with this main character. And, I mean, I was saying to you before the... before the podcast that I just lost time in this book. Like, I picked up this book, Sarah left, I lived the book, and then the book was over, and then I came into work the next day going,
oh. It really is a unique thing, and we can't wait for people to pick it up and read it.
It's going to be so exciting. I think, yeah, people are going to really love it. Thanks so much,
guys. And you're already nutting away at something new, which is very exciting, but you've instructed us not to jinx it.
No talking why. About the new
I think you've just jinxed it.
Why would you do that, Ben? It's dead.
I'll have to start again.
You can't discuss or look at the magic, or it won't work.
And you've got this enormous amount of press and touring lined up with both books now, just sort of running one on the back of the other, and you're finding this bigger and bigger readership every week, it seems. Where did you like? How do you feel now, as opposed to, you know, even just 6 months ago?
It's the coolest thing, I have to say. Like, it's really great. I'm not gonna lie. Like, I just feel so excited, and I, you know, I feel excited for always for the stories and the characters, and that they're going to reach new readers, and I'm going to be able to talk to those readers as well. Is a really cool thing. Sort of comparing how I felt, I think I'd probably more clearly compare it to just before Wimmera came out and how I felt then, because I'm kind of in that similar mode now with The Rip just coming out. And I think there I was nervous. I was very nervous about how it would be received, whereas now I feel like... You never feel, I suppose, like you're sure of how readers will take it or how readers are going to engage with the story. But I feel happy with this story. I feel happy about where it got to and what it's doing. And I feel quite proud of it in some ways. And, doing the publicity and those things is just kind of, I don't know, it's one of the nice parts of publishing. You have to go out and travel and meet booksellers, and it's never, I think if you, there's a contrast clearly between that and the general nature of what you're doing, which is being locked away in a room and typing and disappearing into this world. And to go out and talk about the book is something different. It's a different kind of skill, but... I enjoy it. It's been a really, I'd say, an unexpected part of the job. When Wimmera was just about to come out, I don't think I appreciated what that would be like, having to go out and talk and give author talks and speak to media and those sorts of things. When you're an unpublished author, you've got that end goal, which is getting published, and that somehow... you know, happiness will rain down on you at that point. Yeah, my life will have meaning. But it's, of course, it's not like that. And I think that all you can ever do is, I enjoy the process. I enjoy writing. And if I ever felt that wasn't enjoyable anymore, that would be the day, you know, I'd take up painting or music or something else, because you have to love it. You have to love it to be able to spend, however many hours in there. It can't just be about, going out and meeting lovely people like you or going to bookshops. even though that's really cool, you've got to love the process, and I do, and hopefully I will continue to.
Oh, we bet you will. Mark, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast today. If you want to grab a copy of The Rip or Wimmera, they are both available from booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks so much, Ben. Thanks, Sarah. It's been great to chat today. It's a great conversation.
You can just come readers. Back anytime. That would be great.
I'd be really happy to. No, it's been, just a really wonderful experience and great to hear your insights as well about The Rip.
Even the ones who we struggle to, boys.
I'm the same. Don't worry.
It's been a pleasure having you. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.